All right, so Revelation 17. Let's open up to Revelation 17. But before we start, just want to make a couple comments. Obviously, Brother Al, when he teaches from the futurist viewpoint, right?
Yeah.
Eric. So he teaches from the futurist viewpoint. What I wanted to do, I did this from the beginning. From the beginning when we first started Revelation, is I wanted to teach it. You know, obviously I lean towards being, you know, the futurist viewpoint. But I wanted to teach it because not every Christian sees Revelation the way the futurist does. They see it in many different ways.
And if you want to do preterist, this is about the best.
Probably, yeah, you're right. You're right.
It fits better with preterism than anything else.
It does. You're right. But there's a couple things there that we're going to talk about them where it kind of doesn't fit. But so I want to, you know, I guess I'm being fair, if you want to call it that, that I want to, you know, first of all, let you guys know, and I'm sure most of you guys already know, that, you know, not all Christians see Revelation the way we see it. Everybody sees it differently. And the three views we're going to be looking at, obviously the futurist view, the amillennial view, and the preterist view. I think those are the three popular views when it comes, and there's many views. We talked about the different views. I think we talked about five or six of them. But I think these, in my opinion, I think these are probably the most popular views, the preterist view, the amillennial view, and the futurist view. So in Revelation 17, Brother Al, he did 1 through 6. So let's read from your outline the first paragraph, and then we'll talk briefly about verses 1 through 6. So the top of your outline says, Revelation 17 provides a complex and highly symbolic account of the judgment of Babylon the Great, often interpreted as a representation of corrupt worldly systems, false religion, and political powers opposing God's kingdom. Now, this outline that I did for you is neutral. It's not favoring any view. So I try to do it as neutral as possible. And it might kind of favors a little of the amillennial view. Maybe. But we'll see when we go through it. But in verses 1 and 2, these are the verses that Al talked about last week. Verses 1 and 2, an angel shows John a vision of the great prostitute seated on many waters. I wrote "may" there. It's many waters. Symbolizing the influence over many peoples and nations associated with spiritual and moral corruption. So let's read 1 and 2 real quick. Of Revelation. Then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls, these are one of the seven angels that we see in chapter 16, right? In chapter 16, we see the wrath of the bowl judgments. So it says, then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and said to me, come, I will show you the judgment of the great prostitute who is seated on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed sexual morality, and with wine of whose sexual morality the dwellers on earth have become drunk. That's 1 and 2. Now verses 3 and 6 in your outline, symbolic vision. John sees the woman adorned in luxurious attire, drunk with the blood of saints, representing her role in persecution and her immoral, idolatrous nature. She is identified as Babylon the Great, the mother of prostitutes, and the earth's abomination. So that's 1 through 6. Today we're going to do 7 through 18, God willing. All right, so I'm going to write a couple things on the board here, because this is important. We're going to look at these verses with different lenses. So when it comes to the woman, let's look at the preterist. And how many here remember, did I write that right?
Correct.
Yeah. How many remember, what's the preterist view? They see what? All these?
Everything ended at the year 70.
Right. Mm-hmm. Everything ended at the especially these
verses that we're going to be discussing here. Starting from chapter 4 all the way to 20, is it a 20? 4 to 20? Mm-hmm.
Those are the verses that they say, or those are the chapters and prophecies that they say they already happened before 70, or at 70 AD, or before 70 AD. So the preterist view interprets Revelation 17 as symbolic portrayal of Jerusalem's apostasy and Rome's involvement in her downfall, with most details fulfilled, like Brother Eric just said, in the first century, particularly by AD 70. This view frames the chapter as describing divine judgment on Israel for rejecting Christ and allying with the Roman Empire. So, the woman, the great prostitute, the preterist will see her as what? Anybody know?
Jerusalem.
And then who would they say the beast is?
Rome.
Rome, but more specifically?
Nero.
Good. Okay. The Roman Empire, like John rightly said, Nero. Because Nero was the emperor that was reigning during that time when John wrote Revelation. Okay. And then we're going to see the 10 horns and the 7 heads, and the 7 kings. We're going to look at that in a little bit. So, the Amill view, how would they see the woman? Who's the woman in the Amill view? Everybody know?
The world system.
They would say, let me start here and how they interpret Revelation. They interpret Revelation, especially chapter 17, the vision of the woman and the beast, they see it symbolically, correct?
Right.
Symbolically. And portraying the recurring pattern of world opposition to God and the church throughout history. So the woman would be who, according to the Amill? If it's being interpreted symbolically, what would they say? And the beast. The woman is who? Symbolically represents what? The idolatrous world system, right?
Right.
Would you say?
Right. The beast is the political world system.
Exactly.
So wait, for the millennials, the prostitute's the world system, but now you're saying the beast is also the world system? They're both the same?
No, they're not the same.
No, but that's what we're saying.
I guess. No.
But they're still worldly related.
Duality.
Say it
they're the same and they're different.
Yeah.
So idolatrous, and then the beast is what? The political.
And when we say world system idolatrous, that means the spiritual perspective?
Yeah, spiritually speaking. Is that good, Jim? Is that good?
Yeah.
Okay. And then the futurist? Who's the woman for the futurist? The great prostitute, the harlot. Well,
our religion, our corrupted Western religion or something.
Did Brother Al say it was considered the future global religious system? Is that okay to say that?
He said the Catholic.
Yeah, he did say the Catholic Church.
That they also believe, you know, there's going to be a future world religion.
Yeah, future.
All faiths lead to heaven as long as it's not Inclusive, or what is it? Exclusive.
Exclusive, right.
Yeah. Future world religion. I think you're talking about...
All of our beliefs are true except yours.
I think where you're going, Eric, is that word, what is it? I can't even pronounce it. Ecumenism?
Ecumenical? Yeah.
Which means that...
all come together and accept all.
Yeah. Haven't you guys seen the bumper sticker of somebody?
Well, some have the coexist ones, too.
Yeah, the coexist ones. They have all the Jewish star. They have the... What else they got?
They have the... They have the Muslim thing. They have they actually have the cross
right.
in it.
So they all are the same.
Yeah.
So that's what the futurists will say, that in the future, which is happening now, but we don't see it to the, fulfilled completely yet, that there's going to be a future world religion. And then the beast is the famous...
Revived Roman Empire,
but
Antichrist.
It's gonna be a literal Antichrist. Literal, right? So that's how they would see these characters in Revelation 17. So with that in mind, let's read these verses. So in Revelation 17, verse 7. But I want to, look at a couple of these. So in the preterist view, the woman called the Babylon the Great is Jerusalem. It's not a future world power or religious system. They don't see this as future. The preterist believes that it already happened. The imagery of the harlot represents spiritual adultery. Because when you read, especially 1 and 2, these are not literal things that are happening here. These are what? Spiritual things, right? Like spiritual adultery, spiritual immorality. We see that in verses 1 and 2. Where do they get this from, that it's Jerusalem? They get it from the Old Testament. They get it from Ezekiel, Hosea. They say that, who was the covenant bride of God? Israel, right?
Israel, yeah. Or the tribe of Judah or something, but yeah, that area.
And Israel became unfaithful, right? And they were allied with pagan Rome. Remember, Rome was the empire that was reigning during this time here, during AD 70. Or before, right? I would say before, right?
Before, yeah.
Yeah. Or before.
Is that true? Why was Rome attacking Jerusalem? Because they rebelled. They're not allied. Oh, it would have to have been before. Even then, in Jesus' time, they were always fighting.
Yeah.
They had a zealot party. So a lot of the leadership, the Pharisees and Sadducees, were kind of tied to Rome because Rome kind of controlled who got picked.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the people weren't.
It says here, God's covenant bride became unfaithful with allying with pagan Rome and persecuting the saints, culminating in her destruction by Roman forces during the Jewish War, AD 66 to 70. The beast on which the woman rides symbolizes the Roman Empire. So this woman is riding on this beast, which is the Roman Empire, who's run by Nero. He's the emperor. The Roman, especially under the reign of Nero. Nero was a Caesar. Is that better to call him a Caesar than an emperor? Or does it mean the same thing?
It means the same thing.
The same thing?
Just like the word Tsar in Russia meant the king, so Caesar meant the king, right? It probably had a little bit more intonation towards being God also.
No, it comes from Julius Caesar.
No, yeah, because they became, the king, it yeah. became Julius the king god. Yeah. His name's not really Caesar. His last name is Julius.
Yeah, Caesar was something. Just like, he was the Caesar.
Was the title.
Just yeah, like a title, exactly, exactly, yeah.
Yeah. God's name is Yahweh, but his title is Lord.
We're going to see the seven heads are viewed as seven kings, emperors, often enumerated as Julius Caesar through Nero, with Nero corresponding to the one who is in Revelation 17:10. We're going to get to verse 10. The ten horns represent supporting rulers or provinces that participate in bringing judgment upon Israel. We see that judgment happened in AD 70 or 66 through 70. Jerusalem portrayed as the adulterous woman is burned with fire. We see that in verse 16. Paralleling Ezekiel 23. We see something similar in Ezekiel 23 when it comes to the burning with fire. God judges unfaithful Jerusalem through her former allies. Destruction of AD 70 is thus as the historical fulfillment of this prophecy when Rome devastated the city and temple, ending the Old Covenant age. So they're getting this, all their information of this, the preterist goes back to the Old Testament. They go back to the Old Testament. They see all this stuff that's happening, what we just talked about. Okay, let's look at the Amil view one more time before we start reading some verses. Again, the Amil view, they see the woman and the beast in a symbolic way, portraying the pattern of world opposition to God and church and the church throughout history rather than a single future geopolitical empire. So the futures will see it as one future geopolitical empire when the Amil, it's happening in stages, right? It keeps on happening right. In different parts of the world, of different parts of history.
Right.
Right? Amillennialists interpret Revelation not as a linear prophecy, but as a series of parallel visions, recapitulating the conflict between Christ's kingdom and worldly powers throughout the present age, between Christ's first coming and his second coming. Revelation 17 fits into the scheme as a depiction of apostate religion allied with political power opposing God's reign. The woman or Babylon the Great represents idolatrous world system opposed to God, often identified as an apostate religion collaborating with political power. In the first century, this image symbolized Rome, the persecuting empire and hub of corruption. But amillennialists emphasize its typological character. Every age manifests new forms of Babylon in worldly systems, luring humanity away from God. Is that good? So throughout the ages, throughout history, these new forms of opposition towards God and towards the church form. And what would we say today? What kind of opposition are we facing today?
You mean like in the Christian opposition?
Yeah, against the church and against God.
I think their biggest thing is that we're exclusive, or that we claim exclusivity. That's what I find is what triggers people the easiest and the most.
Right, we're not tolerant of what we consider sin.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And yet we'll tell them, hey, it even applies to ourselves. It just applies to everybody. You don't get to keep your pride. All those other religions get to keep their pride. So they can all beat their chest and they can justify themselves if they had to stand in a court of judgment. Whereas in Christianity, you can't.
Was the Hitler's, you know, when he did all that, was that against, that was against the church, right? Would you say it was against the church?
Yeah, if somebody got in the way, but the real focus was, and actually I heard a discussion about it the other day. Hitler didn't go after religious Jews. He went after secular Jews, because he knew if he could get everybody to blame secular Jews, automatically the religious ones will get pushed out of the way too.
What were you going to say, John?
He used the Christian church at the beginning. I don't know if he ever actually opposed it.
Mm-hmm.
But he was not a Christian, obviously. But, you know.
Give me a good example of, like, from back in the day, that, you know, the what kind of opposition that was going on towards God and the church.
In original Bible times?
Yeah, from the first coming of Christ to now.
Oh.
During the Reformation, the Catholic Church persecuted the Protestants, and the Protestants persecuted other Protestants.
Mm, okay.
A lot of, if you were in Germany, it was Lutheran, but there was other groups, and the Lutherans would persecute the Calvinists.
And they were killing each other.
Yeah.
Protestants versus...
Catholics. They disagreed on something.
Yeah.
They'd go on to a town and wipe everybody out,
mm-hmm,
because they were free grace people or whatever.
Yeah. The beast with 7 heads and 10 horns symbolizes political power animated by satanic influence. The 7 heads are 7 mountains, a reference to Rome. We're going to talk a little bit about that. And 7 kings representing successive world powers hostile to God. The beast was and is not and will ascend portrays recurring cyclical rise and fall of anti-Christian empires, culminating in a final manifestation of rebellion near the end of the age. So the beast for them is a recurring cyclical rise and fall of anti-Christian empires. That's a continuation. It's cyclical. When the futures will see the beast as one person in the future. And I think we're going to talk about that. This, you know, when he receives when one of the heads receives
a wound,
and he comes back to life.
Yeah.
So the futures will see it that way. Let's see what else. I'm an amillennial.
But then there are amillennialists like Hoekstra, who does believe that there is going to be a future Antichrist.
Mm-hmm.
I guess a future, well, the harlot, but.
I think you told me you believe in that too, right? There's going to be a future Antichrist?
Yeah.
Like a literal Antichrist.
Literal Antichrist.
Yeah. All right, the futurist view. Again, the woman's a future world religion. Al said the Catholic Church. Now, I think not only the Catholic Church we see, but we see the rise of Islam, right, around this world. Islam is very popular nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So who knows? It could be, you know, it could be one, Islam could be the Catholic religion, it could be whatever religion might be coming up in the future, according to the futurist view here.
The thing is, the problem is, how are you going to get the Muslims, the Catholics, the Protestants, the Shintos, the Hindus, all together. The Buddhists, we're all together.
The Antichrist is going to do that, according to the futurist view, right? He's going to get everybody.
It's going to be something that can be done in a short period of time.
Yeah. It will or it won't? Or,
I don't see how it could.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's going to take years for that to happen,
yeah,
right?
Like, you know, 500.
So that's why the future will see like that. This Antichrist is gonna die, and he's gonna resurrect, and then all the people are gonna be, wow, this guy is the God. Let's follow him. And that's how he's gonna deceive the people, when all the religions will come together and say, this is the true God, or the one we need to follow. I need to point out something very important. When it comes to the futurist view, these verses that we read. The futurists consider that this is in the tribulation period, the 7-year tribulation period. When the Amill does not think that, the Amill doesn't think there's going to be a 7-year tribulation period. This is happening throughout the ages, correct?
Right.
And obviously the preterist view thinks it already happened. But we see this.
And yet we could take aspects of them and say they're all right.
Yeah.
There'll be a one final wrap up that if we could all sit back in a court in the universe and hear the story and say, oh yeah, it was kind of right this one, it was kind of right this other time, and the full wrap-up one, boy, that was the closer.
Yeah. There's, I want to say new, because this view that I'm talking about, that I'm going to be talking about starting in the 80s, it's called progressive dispensationalism. And look what they believe. that mystery Babylon, during John's time, was Rome, right? Mm-hmm. We all agree to that. And then when it comes to Babylon, they believe that it's going to be a future literal Babylon. Future literal Babylon. And we see it through the Old Testament. We see from the Tower of Babel. What else do we see in Babylon? Nebuchadnezzar. Who's the guy
in
that...
In the 80s, progressive what?
Progressive dispensationalism. Who started Babylon? Nimrod, right? Nimrod, right?
I believe.
Could be, yeah.
Yeah. So they take all that and say that type of Babylon's going to come back in the future. In a little...
There is a group in Iraq that has recently been talking about, mm-hmm. we need to start up Babylon again here in the country.
Well, we were talking about last week.
Yeah. Somebody mentioned
Saddam Hussein.
Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, he had talked about it, but there's still others now that are still bringing it back up and say now we need to bring it to fruition.
There was a movement in Iraq that can bring it back.
So literal Babylon is Iraq, and it's next to the, is it next to the Euphrates?
Yes. At least from a geographic standpoint, it would have.
And we read about the Euphrates in chapter 15, I think it was, or 14. And then they believe that the city of Rome is this mystery Babylon during John's time. They think a future rebuilt of Babylon is going to come back, and potentially any dominant city or empire throughout history, since the center of world power shifts over time.
Miami. Seductress.
Yeah. So in a way, if you look at this, like you were saying, that's the reason why I bring this up, is that they all kind of, this view here, the progressive, they take all, it looks like they take all the views and they mix it together. Right?
Well, that's what progressive dispensationalism would be, kind of a melding of all of these through time.
Yeah. The progressive dispensationalist takes dispensationalism and covenant theology, mm-hmm. and they mix it together. But they still see Israel and the church distinct. They still see a 1,000-year millennium coming. So they still hold those views. But they do mix covenant theology with dispensation. They put it together.
Now when you say they view Israel and the church
distinct.
I mean, the church is a people-related thing. Israel is a geographic. Now, do they look at Jews and Christians that as distinct?
You know, no, they don't.
So, for example, let's suppose that in a year we find out half the Hebrew people in Israel have become Messianic Jews, Messianic believers. Would we at that point then say, oh, they're no longer distinct from all Christian believers because they're part of the church then at that time? How would we even decipher the semantic separation between these words? You know what I'm saying? Because conceptually, any person, once they're born again, whether they're from a Jewish
family,
they're the church.
Yeah. Messianic or whatever.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So then therefore these people who would have this view that, oh, anybody who's Israel and the church are distinct, they must really mean anybody who's old Jewish Hebrew belief system and the church, they are distinct. Because that's part of the problem. When people talk about Israel versus the word Jew versus the word, let's say, Orthodox, mm-hmm. Even the Jews can, even the people who live in Israel cannot come to agreement of who is a Jew.
Yeah.
So if they can't figure it out, I don't believe any, quote, Christian person can figure it out unless they define these words before they start talking about it.
The way they define it is that, they define it is that the promises for Israel in the Old Testament are still
for that land for those people for his, who believe.
Yeah, they're still intact.
It. Yeah, right.
They're not transferred over to the church.
Right, and yet those promises for them do come to believers.
And then the promises of the church are not transferred into the, or they're not for the.
They're not interactively.
Right. That's how they would say it. They won't say, they won't differentiate a Jew becoming a Christian and say, no, he's not really a in the church. He's messianic. No, no. Like we just said, they're all.
They're all.
Well,
yeah.
Paul's in Galatians. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So that's how they would define
yeah, but,
that.
But they would also say that Jews, unbelieving Jews, there's nothing special about them
right.
anymore.
Right.
They are just, you know, like the French.
Yeah.
It's just another nation.
Yeah. Yep, that's true. I'm glad you brought that up because I wrote that down here. So, let's look at some of the verses here. Let's start with verse 7. So it says John, right? He's the author of the book. He sees this woman. And again, which one do you want to pick? He sees this woman. And she's... And I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints, the blood, oh, that's verse 6, I'm sorry, and of the martyrs of Jesus. When I saw her, I marveled greatly. Here's verse 7. But the angel said to me, John, why do you marvel? Or why are you astonished, some verses say, or translations say. I will tell you the mystery of the woman and of the beast with 7 heads, 10 horns that carries her. So, the angels, why do you marvel, John? You look at this woman. You see her. She's the great prostitute. She's committed sexual morality with the saints, with the dwellers of the earth. And who the dwellers of the earth would be what? The unbelievers, right?
Right.
She's sitting on this beast. And look at this beast has 7 heads and 10 horns. You're marveling at that. And then in verse 7 through 8, the angel's going to tell the mystery of the beast. In verses 9 through 11, the mystery of the 7 heads. Verses 12 to 14, the mystery of the 10 horns. And 15 to 18, about the woman. All right, verse 8. The beast that you saw was... and is not, and is about to rise from the bottomless pit and go to destruction. Somebody, some translators say the abyss, right? Who has abyss? You got abyss, right?
Abyss.
What's the abyss? What's the bottomless pit? What would you say that is? Hell, right?
Yeah, that's what the Balrog lives.
The abyss could be.
But interesting, the beast comes out of the abyss. The ocean is also sometimes called the abyss.
Mm.
And then, well, it says he comes from the ocean, out of the ocean.
Oh, yeah, the standing on the shore, 1 foot on land.
Yeah.
And 1 foot
he's coming out of the ocean. So
you said 12?
I said 12, I'm not sure.
Because I know in 11:7, look at, go to 11:7. It says that the beast that rises from the bottomless pit, same as the, here in verse 8. In verse 13, in chapter 13,
yeah.
It comes out of the sea.
Right, and then in 15 it says, the waters which you saw, which would be the sea.
But I think the sea and the abyss are two different things, right? Would you say?
It would. The abyss is a little bit deeper waters.
how do you get the beast out of the abyss?
If you take
beast,
which...
The beast is narrow?
I think that's one of the flaws of that view, right? Would you say?
Yeah, so you can't really
the, is grab that, is the is a world well, comes from hell, yeah.
Which is the Amel view, right?
Right.
And then the beast, world, Antichrist.
Beast comes
from the abyss.
From the abyss.
From the bottom of the
pit. It would be a man. He comes from the abyss, and then he was not a man.
But it says this beast was. What does that mean? That he once lived, right?
Mm-hmm.
And is not. And then he's going to rise from the bottomless pit.
So then it's almost saying it's times when Satan, you know, he steps in to physicality and he steps out and he steps in again, and he's just choosing his times to try to interact, to mess everything, to mess up God's plan.
But it's not Satan.
It's not him, Satan, as we see him.
Satan is the dragon, according to what we're reading in Revelation.
Right, but it's still that kind of... if he can appear in multiple ways to whatever we're looking for, then he can be the dragon at times, and he can be the shining light at times. Mm. And all of these things... It's certainly not a representation of Jesus. And
it's not
a representation of a plain old man. So there's only two strong forces in the universe that can present themselves to man to deceive or to enlighten. And the deceptive way, all roads lead to it from the Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress. There's only one little path that gets you off the road.
Yeah. What were you going to say, John?
But the beast and the dragon have to be different because they appear together. So they're not the same.
Yeah.
Or. If everybody can have the Holy Spirit, and yet we're all looking to God, we're looking to Jesus, but the Holy Spirit's walking in all of us, isn't it possible that a time when there's Satan is actually indwelling in one of these guys, and the other guy's so corrupted himself that even other demons are influencing him? And you know, I've read things about like witches' covens and things like that, and these guys come to compete with each other. And they all, each guy in the group thinks that the powers that he controls are better than the other guy. And so if one guy beats the other guy, he gets to receive the other guy's demons, if you want to call it that. So by the time you get to a point where there's, quote, the beast and the Antichrist and what's the other guy?
The
false prophet.
It's all the same thing, you think?
It's not necessarily one personality, but it is all an influence of
Satan,
a guy floating in the room working.
Well, it says that.
It
says that these guys are going to be influenced by Satan. They're going to be
by Satan ultimately. And every now and then he might jump into one of the bodies and we'll do a miracle here and I'll jump back out. And the guy, when he jumps back out, the guy will think, "Wow, I'm so great! Boy, look what I can do!" Not realizing it's really the demons working through him.
What are you going to say, John?
You're looking at, you know, the beast as a person. You can also look at it as a empire, like a Roman Empire.
Mm-hmm.
So then, you know, the Roman Empire was, it wasn't, yeah. And it was again.
And it's going to revive again, yeah.
Revive again.
So that's this view here. It looks like this Putter's view has a problem with that.
Well, the futurist also, because it says, you know, it can be a revived Roman Empire. It used to be. It's not here now.
Mm-hmm.
Be back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To me, it seems like the beast. What it says in the verse here. It lived previously, right? It was. It means that it was alive, but it back previously, right? Can we agree to that? And it not on the earth when John wrote Revelation. This beast was not around when John wrote Revelation. It seems to me, this is my opinion. And then, however, he will come back when he ascends from the bottomless pit or from the abyss.
Now, it's interesting, in the last entry you have here, it says the 10 kings will give power to the beast, which we just said could be person or empire,
mm-hmm.
and will ultimately turn against the woman. Now let's go back to the word woman. Does woman mean one influencing entity?
Yeah,
does it mean humanity? Because Satan would be against the woman's heel to try and crush them, and then it says persecuting her and fulfilling divine judgment. Does that mean that again Satan's kingdom turns against Satan's kingdom? Because if the woman is the Catholic Church,
I'm not saying that.
No, I know you're not. But. At different points when we throw out names, so-and-so looks like they fulfill that. Yeah. No, so-and-so looks like they fulfill that. And then you get to a statement like this, where it looks like it's turning on itself. Maybe that's kind of a fulfillment when Jesus says, any kingdom, how can I be from Satan? Because any kingdom that turns on himself will self-destruct. Mm-hmm. I mean, even at this time, maybe there are factions within Satan's army where this admiral's fighting against this general, and they're all trying to one-up each other. You know, it's just like this thing with Hamas. They raided Israel. They weren't supposed to do it yet. It was in the planning, and it was talked about, but they wanted to get the glory, so they went first, and now the Hezbollah guys are like, oh, no, you idiots, you're not supposed to have gone. Iran says, we don't have anything to do with you. And I don't know, in the spiritual world, could there be factions that also fight?
It says that they'll go against each other here.
They go against each other, and from their view, they don't really care. We're killing humans. We want to gather in as many humans as we can because we get points for it in some fashion.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's no, we won't know until we get closer and closer and hopefully pulled out, and then we can watch the gallery.
Possible. Yeah.
It's
like, oh, we're, you know, how loyal are they going to be?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Because you see that, like, in communist countries where some guy will kill off another group and he takes charge over it. And,
so we see here the dwellers in verse 8 are the ones that are not written in the book of life. So those are unbelievers, right?
Right.
From the foundation of the world. Will marvel to see the beast. They're going to marvel, these people. Again, you know, if you're speaking from the futurist point of view, this is happening in the tribulation. Now, the Amil will say this, that's going to happen in the future, right? Obviously, it's going to happen in the future.
I'm not exactly sure how they take that.
Okay. These people, these dwellers are going to say, they're going to marvel at to see the beast because it was, is not, and is to come. Verse 9. This calls for a mind with wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman is seated. Let's see here. 13th. I think we already did. We do Okay, so I'm sorry. Let's go back to verse 8. When it says that this beast is gonna come back, and we were talking about this earlier. According to the futurist view, the beast is gonna receive some type of wound, and he's gonna come back. And where do we see that? Look at 13, chapter 13, 3 and 4. And they worshiped the dragon Satan, for he had given his authority to who? The beast, right? And they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like the beast, and who can fight against it? And the beast was given a mouth uttering haughty and blasphemous words, and it was allowed to exercise authority for 42 months. So this is where we see that it received some type of mortal wound. In verse 3, one of its heads seems to have a mortal wound, but its mortal wound was healed, and the whole earth marveled as they followed the beast. So the futures will connect verse 3 to 17. What verse is that? 8. You guys see it?
3 goes to 8.
13:3. They will connect that with verse 8 of chapter 17. Oh, yeah.
Man, you need some kind of database or something to tie this all together. Throw questions at it and it says, oh, here they are. This one's tied with that.
Let's talk about the seven heads or our seven mountains. Seven mountains. We go back, and many people believe this is Rome, because Rome was known everywhere as the city of seven hills. In the Old Testament, a mountain is symbolic of the authority or a kingdom in Micah. So John sees seven literal hills of Rome. And beyond these, he sees seven heads of Rome, that is the seven kings. Maybe. Maybe.
But is it one of the commentaries says?
Some guy said that that's...
Seven kings. Or there are seven kingdoms.
Seven kingdoms, right, which we're going to get in verse 10. It's going to say, look at verse 10. They are also seven kings, and obviously a king runs what? A kingdom, right? Five of whom have fallen. One is, the other has not yet come, and when he does come, he must remain only for a little while. Now, this is where, I don't know, I'm just,
when it comes to Bible stuff, like, is it okay to go to outside sources?
Sure.
To get information?
Why not?
Yeah, I mean, even the disciples, and they were writing stuff and talking about things, they quoted Enoch.
Yeah.
They quoted whatever books they read at the time that get tied into the scripture here. It just didn't happen to make those novels.
But what did you think God will put it in his word? Like, if you're confused about something, what is this? What is this?
Well, like, God might say to you, don't knock yourself out over this. It's not important. But it's fun to know and keep pursuing. You know, the Bible says there's actually a reward for those looking to find out, the crown of righteousness given to those who long for Christ's appearing.
Mm. That's Revelation, right? Yeah.
That's actually 2 Timothy.
Oh, 2 Timothy.
Yeah. Crown of life, promise. No, not that one. Anyway, the reward is the crown of righteousness, which is given to those who long for Christ's appearing. I heard someone talking about the other day. He said, oh, just being a believer who's looking and keeping their eyes on, especially nowadays, because there's so many Christians who, I don't want to know about that stuff. I don't want to hear about it. I want to talk about it. It's too scary or something. It's like,
yeah, I heard that one before.
It's fun. It's boy, it gives you hope. No. I don't feel hope. I don't want to know.
So if you go to the outside sources, Tacitus was a Roman historian, and he says, and so does Britannica.com, says that that Augustus was the first emperor. I think we discussed this. Didn't we discuss this in Sunday school? So Augustus was the
Caesar
first emperor.
Augustus.
Right. And so if you do the math, you keep on counting down all the way to 7, you get Augustus, number 1, Tiberius, Caligula, Claudius, Nero, Galba.
Oh, so there were only 7 of them.
And
so
Otho.
In a way, you could say they weren't fulfilled. And yet at the end times, you could see world powers coming and doing it all over again.
Mm-hmm. So they say those are the 7 kings. And then it says...
Who are the 7 kings?
Augustus, Tiberius, Caligula, Claudius, Nero, Galba, Otho.
No,
that's according to them. I'm not saying that's... I know other people have different views.
Different views.
Yeah. What do you got?
You want to know the way I see it?
Yeah. Please.
Okay. Augustus, Tiberius, Caligula, Claudius, Nero. Nero is the 5th.
Right.
Galba, Otho, Vitellius. They never really had control. This was the time that there was no Roman Empire. It was chaos. There's nobody really in charge. So the 6th would be Vespasian. The 7th, Titus, he's the 7th, he would only last a little time. Titus only ruled for 2 years. The 8th, the beast is the 8th.
Right, the beast is the 8th.
That would be Domitian. And he also persecuted the Christians. Supposedly, there's a discussion on this. Supposedly, like Nero.
Mm-hmm.
Nero persecuted Christians a lot. Domitian persecuted the missions a lot. So it's like a rehash of Nero. And it says he went to his destruction. Domitian was assassinated. So it would all sort of fit.
But can you tie that to what it says here in the verse we're reading?
Yeah, how does one be and then not be and then be again?
It says that, well, you said that he must remain only for a little while.
Titus, right, 2 years.
He must remain only for a little while.
That's number 7. And then there's number 8.
Yeah, which is the beast.
Which is the beast. Which would be the Antichrist then.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be after Titus, which would be Domitian. Who is also... supposedly persecuting the church.
So what are you saying?
And that also is about the time that John wrote, if you take the later view.
I was going to get to that, because there's two different views on the date of Revelation.
Right.
Some people say it's AD, somewhere in the 60s?
60s, yeah.
And then there's AD 90. In AD 60, who was the emperor?
AD 60?
Like Nero, right?
Nero.
Yeah.
And then in AD 90, who was the emperor? You said it, John. Domitian.
81 to 96.
Yeah. So the majority of scholars say that this is AD 90. They take the later view. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's a lot. And then there's a lot of guys that take the earlier view.
And there's really no clear-cut answer. There's evidence on both sides.
And you know what was more surprising? Because I was reading R.C. Sproul. He's a preterist, partial preterist. Mm-hmm. And he takes the date of Revelation, guess what? When? The 90. Oh, the late view.
Late.
And he's a preterist.
Mm-hmm. He wrote it after the fact. Which is, you know, if you can make a production, doing it after the fact is a good way to do it.
Yeah. Man. All right, so the seven kings, we used, you know, what are you going to do, man? Just, what are you going to do, right?
You're just going to encourage people to keep looking up and pay attention.
Okay,
it's pretty cool to look it up.
There's another view on the seven kingdoms.
Yeah, go ahead.
That they are actually kingdoms. Starts with Egypt.
Yep.
And goes to Rome is the one that is. And then
would be again. Yeah, that's right. World kingdoms. What are the
and
world
then the
kingdoms?
The eighth is the revived Roman Empire.
I got them right here. I wrote it down. Some interpreters understand this to refer to seven historic Roman emperors, but more hold that it refers to seven successive world empires. Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, Rome. And the future ones?
And then, but then after Rome, like nobody?
Hmm?
After Rome, yeah, because they were around for like 500 years, kind of.
Yeah.
And then there was like nothing. There was no world leader. And then what? Britain? Would count them as a world kingdom or not really?
No, I don't think
like,
so.
Nobody really has ever tried to tie everything together.
Yeah.
So that gets you up to what you have. You had six fingers showing.
Yep.
So now we're looking for a revival of one of them.
What's going to happen during,
that makes
in the future?
Point. That kind of from a geographic, physical sense, that makes more sense.
Yeah. What do you think? Makes sense? The kingdoms or the kings or the empires? Okay. Verse 11. As for the beast that was and is not, it is an eighth, but it belongs to the seven. So this beast belongs to the seven here. Okay. And it goes to destruction. Verse 12. Any questions on verse 11? I think we're good, right? Verse 11, we're good? What did I write for verse 11?
Goes to destruction. Okay.
What would you say about that?
In the preterist view, the beast, which I guess is Rome, it goes to destruction. Rome kept on going for hundreds of years.
Mm.
So that's kind of a problem for them.
But I think they see it more as the Nero, right? The person. Did Nero he committed suicide, or what happened to him, or he got killed?
He committed suicide.
Is that what you said?
I think so. Yeah.
Verse 11: the beast lived previously, but not alive at this time. The beast is seven. Okay, at that time. Okay, this beast here, according to the futurist view, and again, some scholars say that Revelation is not to be taken chronologically. Because if you read Revelation 17 here, it's taking you back, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's taking you back because the seven bowls was happening. It happens right before the coming of Christ. But this here in 17 is taking you back. And the futurists believe this is going to happen in the middle. I mean, in this side of the tribulation. Verse 12, And then the 10 horns that you saw are the 10 kings who have not yet received royal power, but they are to receive authority as kings for 1 hour together with the beast. 1 hour. 1 hour. I think I wrote something about that phrase, 1 hour. What did I write down for that? What did I write in your notes? Oh, 1 hour. In Revelation 3:10, go back to Revelation 3:10 real quick. I'm not sure if you can tie this together, but the future is they tie this together. And obviously this verse here, they take it as, the futurists will take it as, well, let's read the verse. Because you have kept my word about patient endurance, talking to the believers, I will keep you from the hour of trial. There's that hour that is coming to the whole world to try those who dwell on the earth. So obviously this trial that's coming upon the whole world in the future, and they tie that to this verse here that we just read, which is verse what? Verse 12. But going back to the Nero thing, it's fascinating, because I wrote down, I got this information, it says some in the early church thought this referred to Nero, where we talked about in verse, was it 11? The best explanation, though, seems to be that even though the physical body remains the same, the beast is two different personalities at before and after points in his career. So this Nero thing, it's pretty hard to, the preterist view, I think they got a problem with that view there of the beast being Nero. What do you guys think?
I think the preterists could have sold the most books in the year 70 and 100, but after that, things started falling apart.
The thing is, the preterist view did not start that early. That came later.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. So even still, but it was probably the best argument going back in the early days, yeah. But as time, it's like everything we study, you get more and more.
Yeah.
You get more and more knowledge, you get more and more possibilities.
But is that good or bad?
I think that God gives us that ability
to know,
to think about things so that we don't become dogmatic about ideas that at the end of the day kind of really don't matter, because the main thing that matters is, hey man, are you saved? Because you might get hit by a car in about 5 minutes.
Where are we at? 13. 13. These are of one mind, and they hand over the power and authority to the beast. Who's giving the power authority to the beast? The 10 horns, right?
Yep.
Which are 10 kings. These 10 horns are 10 kings. They will make war on the Lamb. The Lamb is Jesus. And the Lamb will conquer them. For he is Lord of lords and King of kings. Isn't it supposed to be the other way around? Have you noticed that? King of kings and Lord of lords. This was Lord of lords and King of kings. Yeah. And those whom... And those with him are called the chosen and faithful. So when Jesus comes back, he's coming down with the chosen and faithful. And the angel said to me, the waters that you saw where the prostitute is seated are people, multitudes, nations, and language. So the waters in verse 1 of chapter 17 says the great prostitute is seated on many waters. The many waters are the people, the multitudes, and nations and languages. And the 10 horns that you saw, they and the beast will hate the prostitute. This is what Eric, what you were talking about. They will make her desolate and naked and devour her flesh and burn her up with fire. Well, that sounds kind of literal, right?
Yeah, that's America. They all want to, you know, do commerce with us and everything, but they all kind of hate us and looking forward to the day they can get America out of the picture. And yet we're accused of being you know, the great Babylon that's corrupted the whole world. Everybody speaks English, watches bad movies.
Don't they? Don't the Muslims say that we're the great Babylon?
We're the great Satan.
The great Satan, not Babylon. Right? Which is
almost the same thing. Israel's the little Satan.
Yeah.
Jamaica says we're Babylon.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What? Wow, right. 16, then the 10 horns that you saw, they and the beast will hate the prostitute. They will make her desolate, naked, and devour her flesh and burn her up with fire. For God put it into their hearts to carry out his purpose by being of one mind and handing over the royal power to the beast until the words of God are fulfilled. And the woman that you saw is the great city that has dominion over the kings of the earth.
So who's right?
So the woman is a city.
Yes.
And has power over the kings of the earth. Did Jerusalem ever have power over the kings of the earth in that time? No.
No.
Mm.
Okay, the world system, you can see the world system as the city of man as opposed to the city of God.
Mm-hmm.
Future world religion, would you see that as a city?
Mm. Good question.
If you go into 18,
it turns political in 18. Yeah. I haven't really read like a whole book or a commentary on preterism, on how they interpret Revelation, mm-hmm. but I'm very curious to see how they, you know, all the things that we're talking about, how they see it. What will be their biggest problem, in your opinion, the preterist view?
What would be our biggest problem? They don't live in our time. If we could grab preterists back here now and show them all the things that have
happened. Well, there's some preterists now.
No, but they're not. There's a guy on YouTube, and he's like considered the master preterist. And the comments are, this guy just does this because he gets a following and he can sell his books and keep his little group going.
What's his name? Is it Gentry?
It might be. I don't remember. But I was looking at and listening to a bunch of his stuff, and you see so many gaps and things that he doesn't pay attention to. What I'm talking about is he calls himself a preterist, but I'm saying if you could get the original preterists back in, 120 or something like that, and then you showed them up until today, probably a lot of them would walk away from it. Oh, well, I don't really believe that stuff anymore because obviously you're showing me the fact that Israel became a nation in 1948. Whoa, those guys shouldn't have existed. Mm. And we'd say to them, you were right up until 1948. But then once that happened, a whole bunch of Bible stuff came into play. That's one of the main things that I found when I'm talking with people who claim to be, you know, really into being preteritism.
Is this guy a full preterist or a partial?
No, this guy who's on YouTube, I think he's like a full. He's like considered the main preterist.
Because the full preterists believe that every single, even the second coming of Christ already happened.
Right. Yeah.
This is the new heaven and a new earth.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So I think one of the problems is.
Is his name Gentry? Maybe it is.
Zechariah, when it says that Jesus comes back and he lands on the Mount of Olives, how did they take that? Symbolically? That he already came? On the Mount of Olives, but he came spiritually.
That's not Jesus.
They say it's not Jesus?
No.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's God.
Yes.
Oh.
And landing on the mount is symbolic.
No. Well, I don't
know. When it splits.
If you go to Ezekiel, God is in a temple, he leaves, he goes to the Mount of Olives, and then he leaves. Mm-hmm. Zechariah. He is leaving Jerusalem. He's not coming. Jerusalem gets destroyed.
Well, because they're Babylon anyway, so this shouldn't even exist anymore, right?
If you read Zechariah, it gets destroyed.
Zechariah 14, right?
Zechariah 14.
It says Jesus.
Half the Jerusalem goes into captivity.
So you don't take that as Jesus? Hmm? You don't. I'm not saying you, but. The preterists don't take that as Jesus?
I don't know. Amel.
Yes.
They
don't take that as Jesus. They take it as God. But symbolically.
Because it says, who does it say? It is. It says God.
It says the Lord.
The Lord. Jehovah. Okay, it says Jehovah. Huh? The the Old Testament never uses Jehovah
as Jesus
to speak of the Messiah.
Wow, look at that.
So then it is not, he's not saying that is Jesus.
Zechariah 14, 3. Then the Lord will go out. That's Yahweh, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Lord will go out and fight against those nations as when he fights on the day of battle. On that day, his feet shall stand on the Mount of Olives that lies before Jerusalem on the east, and the Mount of Olives shall be split in two from east to west by a very wide valley, so that one half of the mountain shall move northward and the other half southward. And you shall flee to the valley of the mountain. Where does it say that that he's leaving Jerusalem, you're saying?
That's the way they...
Oh, yeah, it says verse 8.
One guy interpreted, and...
On that day, living water shall flow out from Jerusalem, half of them to the eastern sea. But that doesn't say the Lord will leave Jerusalem.
Doesn't say that he leaves Jerusalem. They just... He takes it from Ezekiel where it leaves.
Oh, in Ezekiel. Wow, I never heard that one before.
For I will gather all the nations against Jerusalem to battle, and the city will be captured, the houses plundered, and the women's ravished, and half the city exiled.
Uh-huh.
But the rest of the people will not be cut off from the city.
Uh-huh.
Then okay, it says the Lord will go and fight against those nations. But, you know, the guy who I was reading, he just kind of skips that part. You get this a lot in eschatology.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It doesn't fit, but we'll skip it.
Yeah.
So, and he says, you know, that's like in Ezekiel. He's going. You could also take it as he's coming.
I wonder why, I never asked you, man, you opened up a can of worms here. I wonder why the futurists, I don't know if the futurists take that as Jesus. Because yeah. I guess it's the battle, they take it as the battle of Armageddon, right?
Armageddon, yeah.
That's the battle of Armageddon.
Mm-hmm.
And in Revelation says that Jesus will come. We just read it, the Lamb. Right? Right? The Lamb.
The Lamb will come, yeah. Jesus is coming. Well, Jesus is God, so yeah, that's the same.
That's how they tie it, yeah.
So then, the Old Testament never is called.
Never called.
Jehovah.
Yahweh.
Yeah, it calls the Messiah Jehovah.
That's homework to do. Interesting.
But that's a problem for Amils.
That's a problem for Amils?
Zechariah 14.
Why?
Why? Read it. It says, you know, they'll be coming, they'll be...
It seems like this is happening literally. Hmm? It seems like it's happening literally.
Right, and the people will be celebrating the Feast of Tabernacles.
Uh-huh.
Well, we don't believe that they're going to celebrate the Feast of... When is that going to happen? Well,
yeah.
Millennials say it's during the millennium.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a millennium like that, so...
Well, you do have you don't have a millennium, a thousand year reign. You have it, it's now. Yeah.
And we're not celebrating the Feast of Tabernacles.
Right, right.
All right, it could be. Depends on how you take it.
Exactly. Wow. You good, brother?
Awesome study.
I got one other question.
Go ahead. I love questions.
Okay.
Anybody want to borrow one?
The seven.
I have one.
The seven heads.
Uh huh.
Are part of the beast, right?
Yes.
But they are kings, so they are part of the beast.
Yeah.
And then the beast is another king. Oh, how could the beast, which has seven heads, be another king? Because it, you know, and the beast it has seven heads. The ten horns are also part of the beast. And if this is the, you know, you say the beast is the Antichrist. Well, the Antichrist, well, he's got seven
mm-hmm.
heads, so there are seven kings. They're sequential. So, you know, like...
It says the beast, if you take it to be the Antichrist, was full of blasphemous names, and it had seven heads and ten horns.
Right.
And you're saying...
And then it says the seven heads are seven kings.
Right.
So the... Then if you say the beast is the Antichrist, then the Antichrist has seven kings and ten horns, or ten kings. And then the beast itself, with its seven heads and ten horns, is another king.
Mm-hmm.
Does it make sense?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Hmm.
Never thought of that one. But doesn't it say that the beast is gonna, or I'd say that he's gonna be control, not controlling, but influence these kings, right? Or is it the other way around? Or the dragon is influencing.
The 10 kings serve the beast.
Right. And those 10 kings end up, they join together to fight against the woman.
The woman, right.
Yeah. And the woman could be a system, or it could be
the future world religion.
Yeah.
Curious and curiouser.
Jerusalem. It's curious, very curious. I called Laz. He's he went to the doctor today, so he hasn't called me back. I told him to call me when he's done. We never did.